Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Jennifer Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Today, my guests are Dr. Lori Richmond of the Humboldt State University Environmental Science and Management Department and her three graduate students who are working on fishing community sustainability planning in Eureka and Shelter Cove. Thank you so much for being on the Eco News Report today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Lori, why don't you tell the listeners about this project? What is fishery sustainability planning exactly?
It's called fishing community sustainability planning, and the idea is that it involves working with stakeholders and fishing and waterfront interests, working together sort of in a bottom-up process to develop a set of recommendations for how we can go forward towards improving the sustainability and resilience of our communities.
And what is the reason for doing this now? Like, you got a grant, right?
Yeah.
But there's a reason in the bigger picture why this is so important.
Yeah. So I'm just finishing up a 3-year study in collaboration with Steve Hackett from the economics department at HSU, kind of looking at the socioeconomic aspects of the marine protected area networks. What are some of the baseline socioeconomic conditions in the fishing communities on the North Coast? And what were some of the initial impacts from the MPA network? Doing that, we had a lot of conversations with fishermen. We interviewed over 200 up and down the coast, and we had some focus group conversations. We discovered that there are a lot of opportunities here. Fishing contributes a lot to our economy, our culture, our way of life. But there are also some challenges that fishermen are facing in terms of the viability of the industry. After conversations with fishermen, they decided they're tired of being reactive to new situations. They want to be a little more proactive. So the idea was, let's get together and plan for how we can be prosperous into the future. And I'll note that when we talk about community sustainability planning, we're really thinking about a triple bottom line approach, thinking about social, economic, and environmental sustainability together. And a huge part of the thinking of this is the social and economic side. So while maintaining environmental protections, how can our fishing and waterfront industries continue to be prosperous?
What are the trends right now as far as in the fishing fleet?
Some things that we found that are exciting is fishing contributes a lot to our economy. There's some estimates that $155 million in the county's GDP, and they employ 4,200 people in ocean-related industries. And so it's a big contributor to our economy. But we've also discovered that there's been a decline in commercial fishing participation. There's fewer and fewer vessels, fewer and fewer people fishing. And that's for a variety of reasons. Some of those are environmental. Some of those are regulatory. But as the fleet's gotten smaller, so have some of the support industries to help the commercial fishing industry. So things like fuel and ice, processors, fish buyers, infrastructure. And so as the fleet's gotten smaller, those have declined a little bit as well. So those are some challenges. One of the big things we've noticed, it's a trend nationwide called the graying of the fleet. And what happened is the average age of the commercial fishermen is getting older. On the North Coast region, the average age of a commercial fisherman is 55, and over a third of the fleet is over 60. And so there's more older fishermen in the fleet, but there's less younger fishermen coming into the industry. And so that leaves a real concern of what's going to happen when these fishermen retire, whether we'll be able to continue to have a fishing industry, or what can happen when fishermen retire is they sell their permits and they could sell them out to different ports. And so how do we maintain an industry, have kind of young people getting into the fishery to maintain that industry going forward?
Laura, why don't you start by introducing yourself and talking a little bit about what your role in this project is going to be?
Yeah, I'm Laura Casale. I'm a graduate student in environment and natural resource science. We have been beginning with the outreach in both communities, focusing on the Shelter Cove community and the outreach there and getting people to talk to each other as far as with all the people involved and getting information to them and getting them in the places where we can also talk to them.
Sounds good. Lots of talking. It reminds me, this last summer, Humboldt Baykeeper launched our study looking at mercury levels in fish, and we started off by hiring a charter boat captain to take a bunch of fishermen who volunteered to fish for science out on the bay to catch California halibut. And it really drove home for me why fishermen are such talkers, because there's a lot of time in between catching fish to talk. A lot of them are really great conversationalists and storytellers, I discovered.
Yeah, I found that too. When I'm talking to fishermen in the past, project I work with Lori Richmond and Stephen Hackett on the MPA baseline monitoring project and doing outreach in the multiple ports of the North Coast. Once you get them to start talking, you know, we can be talking for a little while. It's pretty interesting, the stories that they've had. And mostly, I would say they talk in their own group. And so that's really great part of this outreach campaign is to get people from different groups to talk to each other.
So, Rob, why don't you go next? Tell us your name and what your role in the project is.
My name is Rob Dumochel, and I'm a graduate student in the Environmental and Natural Resource Sciences program at Humboldt State University. I'll be focused on the city of Eureka and the port there. So much like Laura and Lori talked about earlier, there'll be a lot of talking with fishermen, but also looking at previous planning efforts that have gone on and seeing kind of just historically like how we got to where we are today and like what ideas we have from the past that can be brought forward, or just kind of assessing the situation and giving us a little bit of foundation for future workshops and other things that we're planning to do as part of the project.
Okay, Wyatt, how about you? Tell us your name and your story and your role in this project.
I'm Wyatt Smith. I came here to study sharks and human-predator relationship. And I had mentioned to Lori that I also have a pretty substantial background in oyster mariculture. And so I'm still kind of in the infancy of what we're going to do with my contribution, but I'm going to be speaking with mariculture stakeholders in Humboldt Bay, as well as other stakeholders and users of the bay, specifically fishers, kind of residential areas around there, and recreational users, just kind of to assess vulnerabilities in the mariculture industry right here.
So you have a background in the mariculture industry from where? Chesapeake Bay, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you fish as well?
I do, yeah.
What do you like to fish for?
Well, I grew up fishing for lobster going up in Maine, and I also worked for NOAA, the National Marine Fisheries Service, as a biologist and observer out of Rhode Island for the groundfish fishery fleet, and I also used to just fly fish all over the country. But my background in mariculture is specifically in Virginia and the Chesapeake Bay area, just growing oysters. I don't know much about clams, but I'm really excited to learn a lot about it.
And how about you, Rob and Laura? Are you fisher people?
I am not a fisherman. At most, I'm a swimmer and an enthusiastic body surfer, but I'm not any good at either.
Tell them about the kind of swimming you do, though, Rob.
Well, I do marathon swimming, but, you know, like the long, slow, kind of not exciting swimming. So I've done plenty of swimming in the bay, but I haven't done any fishing.
Yeah, I actually been fishing for about 12 or 15 years or something in Shelter Cove mostly with my family, just recreationally for salmon and rockfish. Occasionally, when the river's in decent condition, we do steelhead salmon fishing when the season's available. But yeah, I surf in North Coast, mostly Shelter Cove.
And how about you, Laurie? You fish?
I do fish, sometimes surf perch fishing on the beach. I've gone canoe fishing out of Trinidad and recreational boat fishing out of Eureka and Trinidad, and sometimes fish in the rivers and razor clam digging.
And then you have a background in fisheries management where you've worked in Alaska and Hawaii, right?
Yeah, I did my graduate research on fisheries in Alaska, and then I spent time working for National Marine Fisheries Service in Hawaii and then ended up here. So I've kind of seen how fisheries policies work in different contexts and try to bring some different ideas from other places.
So let's talk a little bit more specifically about this project. And Lori, you got a grant. Tell us a little bit of the background of why you applied for this grant.
Yeah. You know, so like I mentioned before, after the MPA project, we had conversations with fishermen about a desire to be more proactive and address some of the long-term concerns they have and how to plan together. And then we reached out to local government officials to see if there was any interest. So the City of Eureka, Humboldt County, the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District, the Shelter Cove Resort Improvement District, all of them expressed real interest in this and investment. And so we had a kind of a team of collaborators together, and we decided to go ahead and apply for some money to do it. I'm the principal investigator on the project, but there's a lot of people that are going to be working on this effort. Steve Hackett and Will Fisher in the economics department are going to kind of help with some of the economic analysis. Joe Taberzi, who's the Sea Grant Extension Agent, is going to kind of help with some of the extension outreach. Brian Tissot, who works as the director of the Marine Biology Lab, is going to help with project management. Really exciting, we're going to be collaborating with a planning consultant firm called Lisa Wise Consulting. The lead there is Henry Pontarelli, who's the vice president, and they have done this type of work in other ports. So they worked on developing fishing community sustainability plans in Morro Bay and Monterey. And once those plans were completed, they led to a lot of benefits to the community. They started implementing the actions right away. So I think we've got great ideas and a great model. By working from them, they can bring some of the lessons learned up to here. And so the grant that we all apply for together is called the NOAA Saltonstall Kennedy Program, and it's actually a grant program specifically designed for grants that collaborate with fishermen. So they're really looking for things that improve things for fishermen. And then we got an additional small grant from the California State University System Agricultural Research Institute to add the mariculture component, which is why it's here with us today. So we can really take a holistic look at the working waterfront, and so include commercial fishermen, charter recreational fishermen, the mariculture industry, also tourism.
It sounds really exciting, which is in contrast to most of the news that you hear about fishing. And right now, there's some pretty dire predictions for the Klamath salmon run.
Yeah, but I think things like this and sort of what happened last year with the domoic acid and the crab and kind of point to the need for some real long-term planning about how the port can reduce some vulnerabilities. And one of those vulnerabilities might be being over-reliant on a couple of species. Over half of Eureka's landings revenue comes from Dungeness crab. So when you have a really bad crab year, kind of the whole port can suffer. And so part of that might be some planning for how we could diversify the species that we're fishing in this planning process. So I think when there's discussion about, you know, especially commercial fishing, it's always the story of the industry that's dying. And actually, when you look at the data, what's really interesting is you can see, yes, since the 90s and even the 80s, there's been a real decline in the number of vessels. But around 2008, 2009, there's actually been a bump up. The amount of fish that we're catching and the number of vessels that are participating North Coast wide has increased. And so the industry is not dying. It's not going well. You know, they're still bringing in a high of $24 million of landing in Eureka on some years. So they're bringing in a lot of money within the constraints of what we can harvest to be sustainable. There's still a lot of opportunity for growth.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Econews Report. I'm your host, Jennifer Cault with Humboldt Baykeeper, and I'm speaking with Dr. Lori Richman and her three grad students about fishery sustainability planning. So, Lori, why don't you talk a little bit about how the project is going to start off and what the different steps in the process are?
So the way that the process works, we really want to design it to be bottom-up. So the idea is to capture the views of stakeholders about what the key port needs are and to kind of bring all of those together and try to turn that into a step of recommendations that are realistic and that we can implement. The first thing that we're going to do is to gather existing data to describe the baseline socioeconomic conditions. So about the number of jobs in the various industries, looking at landings data and some patterns like that. Also look at past planning documents. There's been lots of various planning activities that have happened in the city, in the harbor, in Shelter Cove. So what types of plans have been put forth in the past? To what extent have those recommendations been followed through upon? So we can start with a real ground of, okay, where have we been, and then start thinking about where are we going. Then what we're going to do is set up what we're calling advisory committees in each of the communities. And it's important to note, Eureka and Shelter Cove are really different in a lot of ways. So they're going to each have their own unique process that produces their own unique plan. And I think the stakeholders and constituents play a large role in directing sort of what the plan will look like and what it'll focus on. The advisory committees will be made up of key representatives from different stakeholder groups in the waterfront, whether it's commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, charter boat operators, fish buyers and processors, the mariculture industry, tourism, local government, environmental groups like maybe you, Jen. And so those groups will kind of help us make sure that this remains community focused. And so we'll start kind of meet more regularly with those groups. And then what these graduate students here are going to be doing is one-on-one interviews with stakeholders, really short interviews. What are some of the key needs you face? What are some of your challenges? Hey, if you had $5 million to invest in the port, what would you do? And so we can gather that input one-on-one. Then we'll also host a public workshop in each of the ports. So anyone from the public would be invited to attend those and to look at some of the different ideas. And then after that, we'll take all of those, that information together. We'll meet back with the advisory committees and start to take all these different ideas and needs and turn them into a set of recommendations that have priority. So here are the needs. How can we fix some of these problems? What are the key steps to take? From that, we'll develop draft plans. We'll circulate that out to the community for feedback, and then we'll develop a final plan. And our goal is to try to seek to have each of the local government bodies vote on a resolution to support the recommendations. So then local government can start taking the steps, you know, with our help in terms of trying to find different grants available to try to implement the actions.
This is not the first place this has ever been done, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's been done in Morro Bay and Monterey, two ports that have their own unique issues and challenges. What's been really exciting about seeing the lessons learned from there is that once the plans were complete, the local governments ran with them and they started to take steps to implement the actions right away. So one of the key needs that was brought up in Morro Bay was for a haul-out facility for boats. And since the plan's been implemented, they've already begun developing planning documents and taking the first steps to build one. So like three major reports have been commissioned and it's looking really positive, like that's going to move towards being implemented. Something that both communities address that are concerns up here too are sort of the aging of the fleet, so challenges getting young people fishing and also wanting to diversify the number of fisheries that they have available. And so both communities have implemented something that's called a fisheries trust or community quota fund. Those are both different names for it. And so what happens is the community can form a nonprofit entity and they can purchase fishing permits or fishing rights that belong to the community and then lease those out to community fishermen. And so one of the challenges of being a young fisherman getting into fishing is now you don't just have to buy your boat and your gear. You actually have to buy a bunch of permits to be able to fish. And they can be really expensive. We're talking like $500,000, $1 million just to start get going. And so if the community was to have some permits available that they could lease out to younger members to sort of get them started in the industry, that creates a lot of opportunities. One of the fisheries where they're doing that is the groundfish fishery. And so that would be a way to kind of diversify the portfolio here to have a little bit more groundfish available. So those have already been completed in Morro Bay and Monterey since the planning has taken place. And, you know, so as a result of the community buying those permits and that quota, they have more landings in their port than they did before.
So what about the way fish, once they're caught, how are they marketed and sold? And it seems like that's a big part of the problem.
Yeah.
As an outsider, someone who wants to actually consume local fish, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And if you go to the local restaurants, you can get local crab pretty easily, and you can definitely get local oysters. But for a lot of other species that are caught, like I don't know anywhere that you can buy local shrimp. So there's a lot that just ends up leaving the area. That could be something that we could look into, different market ideas, things that will work here. Monterey is a little more urban area, so they might have had some options that may not work as well here. But some fishing communities have developed community-supported fisheries types of systems, like take the CSA model, and have had some success. And there's a couple of entrepreneurs working out of Santa Cruz and Monterey that have developed apps where people in San Francisco can sign up and they can get a weekly delivery of fish. And so kind of using that technology, those things may or may not work here, but there could definitely be a way to look at some of the markets. There may be ways to get more value out of the fish that we do harvest. So I think those would be key things for people to look at.
Mountain View, there's a farmer's market in Santa Cruz where someone buys, and I doubt that person is catching all that fish, but there's a huge variety. And like I bought Monterey sea bass there. That was some of the best fish I've ever eaten in my life. And then my mom, who lives in the Bay Area, she just knows a guy who fishes, and he calls her up and says, you want to buy a whole salmon? You know, he goes over the hill from Santa Cruz and makes his rounds and has his people that he calls.
There are some challenges to the, you know, some reasons why that might not be happening more is if you're going to start selling fish as well as fishing, you need to process that fish. So fillet it. There are some health code permits you may need to follow. Part of that would be building a model to really make it work financially. But sometimes, you know, you kind of run the math on that, and fishermen, they're already fishing and to spend a lot of time in the marketing end and the processing doesn't always add up. So a real thought needs to go in terms of what could be a workable solution. And I think there's been some interesting stuff done in other ports in California that we could look at.
So speaking of which, Ocean Night on Saturday, July 8th is going to feature a movie that's related to your project. It's called Of the Sea.
Yeah, Of the Sea is a really neat, I think we're going to have Ocean Night focus on the working water. So not just the resources there, but who is laboring in the ocean and how does that work and how their livelihoods are connected to the ocean. And Of the Sea is a movie that follows California fishermen, and it just really focuses on fishermen. It picks some of the key species. So it has sort of a little chunk on Dungeness crab and on salmon and on squid and urchin as well. And it just follows the fishermen. So what is your life trying to catch the species? A lot of that work is invisible. They go out to sea. We don't really see what they do. And it kind of just shows on a day-to-day basis what it's like to be a fisherman, what are some of the challenges, but also what are the exciting things fishermen bring, like this delicious wild food that we get to eat.
You and I have seen this movie already. And for anybody who knows Kevin Mulligers, he's one of the fishermen featured in this movie. He used to be a fisherman up here. Now he's fishing out of Santa Cruz, and he has a fisheries degree from Humboldt State. And I'm hoping I can convince him and his wife to come up and be here for Ocean Night that night.
That would be really exciting.
Ocean Night is a monthly film night at the Arcata Theater Lounge that's organized by Humboldt Surfrider, Humboldt Baykeeper, and the North Coast Environmental Center. Delia Benz-Kang does most of the organizing for that, and the doors open at 6:30. The film starts at 7.
Going with the working waterfront theme, we may try to bring some fishermen and oyster growers to have a little bit of a panel after the film to kind of talk about their own experiences in the fishery.
Just getting people to start talking about their experiences. And, you know, we read a lot in the newspaper about the Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and they're having a meeting. They're meeting in Vancouver. They're going to decide all these things. But it's all fairly complicated stuff that, you know, I am always trying to learn more about, but a lot of people around here are really interested in it and really support the commercial fishing fleets. And then, of course, there's all the recreational fishermen around here catching them.
You know? I think that is one of the challenges, too, to think about developing like a CSF or farmer's market model. So many people get fish from themselves or their neighbors. So it'd have to be something that would work here.
Do you guys have other things you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited to be part of this and get fishermen inspired to come talk not only to us and the consulting team, Lisa Weiss Consulting, but also for them to get the support of the community who is very interested in their catching fish and being able to hopefully purchase it locally like we were talking about. But having that interface is going to be really important. And I'm just, however we can inspire people to look forward to possibilities for the future for both of our sports, we're really excited.
It seems really exciting to me because although planning is generally not something that people get really excited about, we know that when plans are developed that have a lot of community support, they're much easier to implement. And we've seen this with the county general plan update being in, I think it's the 17th year now. And there's, I guess you would say, broad disagreement about development in the unincorporated areas of the county, in part because the rules and plans that we have on the books are from 1984. A lot of people who live here weren't even born yet when that plan was finalized. And so trying to follow a plan that's that old leads to a lot of controversy, and it really kind of grinds things to a halt in some senses because there's no agreement on how best to move forward, and people haven't heard from the affected communities and stakeholders and what their issues and concerns are. Although a lot of people only get excited after the plan's done and projects are being proposed, it's really important to get involved and pay attention to these planning processes so that your decision makers are coming up with the most informed solutions to problems. If they don't even understand the problems, they're not going to come up with very good solutions. How about you guys? You want to say anything more?
Well, for what it's worth, I am excited about planning.
So talking to a planning student here.
Yep. But also, in my day job, I do a lot of grant writing and things like this, and a fishing community sustainability plan would be huge, you know, for the city or the county or the harbor district to be able to leverage that information into grant funds from the state or the federal government to be able to show that there's a unified interest in certain things in our port in order to keep it a working port.
Yeah, that's a good point. The grant system is definitely supported by a plan that there's wide support for. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately, and I don't know how soon it will be resolved, about the lands around the bay that are zoned for coastal dependent industrial uses, all the support services for the fishing fleet qualify for that. So it seems like there's plenty of opportunity where the property is zoned such to do those kinds of projects where, you know, we know the fishing fleet here doesn't have enough support from infrastructure as far as the ice manufacturing and cold storage and all those kinds of things. What about processing? Are there enough processing facilities in Monterey and Morro Bay, or did they find that that was one of the things that was necessary to expand on?
Well, Morro Bay is similar to Shelter Cove, and Monterey is similar to Eureka, I think. So those are where we can learn a lot of the lessons. I know one of the things, they had processors really involved in their process, and so there's certain things they want to do, like a community quota fund. It helped to have the processor on board that, yeah, they would accept that fish. So it may be having more processors, or it may be just working on developing relationships with processors to do different things. Marketing and processing will be something we would look at, but we're going to wait till we hear from stakeholders.
I have to wonder, too, you know, recently there was this commercial squid landings here for the first time in maybe ever, I don't know, because of the warmer water, the squid coming further north. I have to wonder, are you going to have any kind of a climate change component where you're thinking, you know, looking ahead to changes that we can expect in the commercial fisheries?
I definitely think those are threats that we have to consider about how the port can be resilient. I think it's hard to predict exactly how climate change will manifest itself. I mean, sea level rise is something we could predict, so that's something to think about, you know, in terms of port infrastructure, how to protect it from that. We can just predict things in the ocean are going to get weirder, and so being more diversified, having more options for how to sell the product and things like that are important to have buffers for things that might be coming into the future.
Right, and perhaps more flexibility as part of the resilience as things change in the ocean. So where can people go to get more information about this project?
So we have a website for the project, humboldtfishplan.com. Rob set it up. Rob's our techie.
The human genius.
He swims. He makes websites. He plans.
All right.
Actually, I want to go back to talk to you a little bit about that squid issue that's really interesting. That squid are coming up here more, but actually, we don't have any fishermen locally that have squid permits. There's only 50 in the state because the squid used to be more south. None of them are from up here. So the landings that came brought some revenue, some tax revenue to the city from the landings, but it wasn't a local fisherman that benefited. They were from out of town. So there are some fishermen that are kind of working on a policy level in California to try to see if we could get some squid permits allocated up here. It's an uphill battle, and I don't know how it'll work out. So that's something to think about, but we also have to work within the existing regulatory structure.
Yeah, during the domoic acid shutdown of the crab season, people who are paying attention to that learned a lot about the way crab is or is not regulated in terms of, you know, the testing and just the inability of the regulators to adapt to changing ocean conditions, having these different zones where the crabs are tested and all this sort of thing. I know that there are people who are looking at trying to change that so that they can be more responsive to such a emerging kind of a crisis before it happens, or, you know, to react better to it while it's happening.
One thing that I think is exciting is just this last summer, the Fish and Game Commission had a meeting about fishing communities. This typically hasn't been a real area of focus for them, but I think they're starting to think about, okay, we're regulating the fish, but we also need to think about the people in the communities we're affecting too. So I think this is a great time. We can take some findings from the plans we've done here, the plans in Morro Bay and Monterey, and maybe kind of advocate on a state level if there are things that need to happen.
Great. Well, it's going to be really exciting to see how this project progresses. We'll be publicizing that widely so that, you know, we can try and get the word out to people, because the Marine Protected Act protected areas research that's been going on has been really something that I'm excited to see the outcome of, because all this money has come in for baseline monitoring that, you know, without the Marine Life Protection Act, we didn't have a lot of the kind of baseline data that exists in other parts of the state.
Yeah, I think it's exciting because when the marine protected areas came in here, we realized, wow, we don't have that much data about our fisheries in our region. So what's exciting is there's all aspects of the ecology, you know, from the fish to the ocean. But there's also our proposal on socioeconomics, our project. And then there's a traditional ecological knowledge project that some of the coastal tribes are working on.
Okay, well, thank you all so much for being here today. And look forward to Ocean Night on Saturday, July 8th at the Arcata Theater Lounge.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
This has been the EcoNews Report. My name is Jennifer Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was speaking with Dr. Lori Richmond of the Humboldt State University Environmental Science and Management Department and her three graduate students who are working on fishing community sustainability planning in Eureka and Shelter Cove. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the KHSU archives at khsu.org. And now we're podcasting. You can subscribe at iTunes and leave us a review. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. The EcoNews Report is produced at Humboldt State University in Arcata, California, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next week for the EcoNews Report.